for this February 20th. We have one bill on the agenda, and that is House File 3085. Before we get to that, just a couple of quick announcements. We have a tour and open house at MnDOT tomorrow, and I think we're meeting down at the in their lobby there. Is that Mr. Howe will confirm that?
G13 and 14.
In the MnDOT building, that's G13 and 14. It's an opportunity to talk to the commissioner and some of the senior staff. They'll make a presentation, but we can also talk with them informally. I know a lot of people have different issues that they want to discuss in their districts and statewide with MnDOT, and so that opportunity exists for us at 10 tomorrow, and we will have a time certain at noon. If you need to leave a little earlier, that's fine as well, or come later. Just within that time frame of 10 to noon. And again, no meeting on Tuesday, the 25th. We will have our regularly scheduled meeting on Thursday. As I just spoke with Representative Torkelson, there are two urgent bills that I am hoping can be in shape for us to discuss as early as next week. And that has to do with the recommendations of the registration fee task force and a bill that I'm having drafted with Senator Newman on Real ID. So stay tuned. We're really hoping we can get that done Thursday, if necessary Friday, but at this point that's on the agenda for next week. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Chair Hornstein, and I share with you the need for urgency on the registration and changes for VTRS that would be very helpful. As far as the meeting tomorrow, that was news, so please.
Oh, okay.
I'm not, maybe I missed something, but.
Okay. So we may have, so members, if no one knows about this and it's not on anyone's calendars, I think MnDOT sent something, but I don't think, unfortunately, it wasn't on a committee. So, well, let's follow up after the meeting.
Well, anyway,
the
it's
meeting.
Unlikely that
well,
I and others will attend.
Yeah.
It's our chance to get home.
Yeah.
And as the other, as far as next week, any chance that you would schedule an extra meeting on a week from Friday?
Well, Representative Torkelson, the only circumstance I would see that, and the speaker has given us some leeway just because we're missing a committee day on mm-hmm. Tuesday. If we were ready with a Real ID and or registration bill and we couldn't do it on Thursday, that would be the only circumstance I could see for having a meeting. And again, you know, doing it on a Friday versus the following Tuesday moves it along that much faster.
Yeah.
So that would be the only circumstance. For
okay. And that's why I asked. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Approval of the minutes of Tuesday, February 18th, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the adoption of the minutes of February 18th as presented to us.
Okay. Representative Petersburg moves the minutes. Is there discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. We are now on to our agenda for the consideration of House File 3085. That's Representative Tabke's bill dealing with transit safety issues. Members, we took public testimony on this last Thursday. I am going to just call for anyone in the public that did not have an opportunity to testify on Thursday, and if they wanted to make any brief comments, now is the time. Is there anybody that would like to testify in favor and opposition to the bill? Okay. And as I also mentioned last week, wanted to take really as much time as the committee needs to ask the author questions. We do have a amendment, a DE1 amendment, Representative Tabke, and if you would like to move that, we can put the bill in the shape you would like the committee to consider it in.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Do we need to move the 3085 first before the DE, or do we?
You know, yes, we do, because you went over the bill, but we laid it over. We didn't move it formally. So, yes, please move House File 3085, and that will be going to public safety, I believe.
Yes, so moves.
Okay. So, to your amendment, Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We have 3085 here today, and so we, after considerable discussion and public input, we have a DE for the amendment, which I'll explain after it is adopted. So I will move to adopt DE, DE1, I believe is the
number. Okay, so members, this is our a routine motion to get the bill and the author the way the author would like it considered. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. The DE1 amendment to House File 3085 is before the committee. Representative Tabke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And so as we have been discussing this bill and working on what is a very, very important issue, we've had a significant amount of testimony and public discussion about the safety and experience on our light rail and transit system throughout the metro and the state of Minnesota. And so as House File 3085, as amended, as we are looking at that, it does two basic things that are both very, very important things. One, DE1 takes and creates a program that we have renamed as the Transit Riders Improvement Program, investment program. And with that, we have TRIP personnel that will be working throughout the transit system and working to help make sure that all fares are being collected, make sure that code of conduct issues are being reported and handled appropriately, to make sure that people on our light rail system, we are now going to restrict it as a pilot program to a six-month pilot program instead of a full-fledged program to get started here. We will be restricting it to light rail only, and in that, we will have TRIP personnel who will be working throughout the light rail system and connecting people to services and making sure that we are working together, connect people with the social services, making sure that we are helping people as much as necessary, as well as upholding the rules and the codes of conduct that we would like to see on our transit system. And so, Mr. Chair, if you're okay, I would like Mr. Burris to walk through the DE, if that would be okay.
I was hoping that Mr. Burris could do that, and then also we also have a fiscal note as
yes,
well
sir.
To have explained. So, Mr. Burris can walk through the DE1 with the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, I'll step through the sections of the DE, and then can certainly answer any questions if there are further information or details that you'd like me to go into. So in the DE, Section 1, it establishes some authority to administer opiate antagonists like Narcan on the part of some of the personnel under the new program. And this is a new addition in the DE compared to the original language. Sections 2 and 3 go to modifications of fines. This reduces the surcharge from the current law $75 surcharge to instead be a $25 court surcharge for the judicial violations relating to fare non-payments as well as rider code of conduct. Section 4 is the main substance of establishing the Transit Riders Investment Program as well as authorizing administrative citations for violations of both fare-related violations and for rider conduct violations. So this section directs the council to implement the program subject to available funds, and there'll be an appropriation that we'll get to a little bit later, provide some pilot period funding. It also kind of lays out some of the basics of the program. Some differences from in the DE from the original is that the TRIP personnel who are authorized to administer the administrative citations as well as have some other duties are the some of the requirements for those personnel are now spelled out. You'll see that on page 5 of the DE1 amendment. And there's also some training requirements for those personnel also spelled out. Additionally, another change, sorry to jump back, but at the bottom of page 4, with an addition in the DE amendment is to direct the council to set up a strategic deployment plan for where the personnel would be stationed or located and operating. The administrative citation authority is similar to the original as introduced language. You'll find that on subdivision 5, bottom of page 5. Contested cases and the disposition process for administrative citations is addressed in subdivision 6. And setting of penalties is in subdivision 7. This language is the same as the original as introduced language, where the penalty level is set by the Metropolitan Council at a range between $35 and $100, and the council is given authority to set up a graduated increasing fine structure. And then moving to page 7, section 5 as well as section 6 reduce the penalty level for violations. Section 5 regards the violations for that are fare related, so fare evasion, using fraudulent or improper fare, failure to show proof of payments. And then section 6 on page 8 is the kind of rider conduct violation. In both cases, the penalty reduction to a petty misdemeanor is accompanied by setting the fine specifically at $10. So the combination between the court surcharge and the fine under either of these provisions would be $35. There are a couple other components to a typical fine on the order of, you know, $1 or $2 or $10, depending on the location of the where the citation would be issued. Section 7 on page 8 has a $1 million appropriation to the Metropolitan Council to initiate the program and requires the council to start up within 6 months of the date of enactment of this section the TRIP program and run it for a period of 6 months and then provide a legislative report following that. This, by the way, is a million dollar appropriation from the general fund in fiscal year 2020, so it would be an appropriation in the current fiscal year. That, Mr. Chair, I think covers the basics of the DE.
Thank you. And Representative Tapke, you had, I think, a video that is part of your presentation on the DE1 that I think maybe better explains Section 4. Would you want to do that now? Would you want to do the fiscal issues? What is your pleasure?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to run through the video quickly, but real quickly first. As you can see through this DE, and thank you very much, Mr. Burris, for walking through this for everyone, we took a lot of the feedback and a lot of the work that came from other folks and incorporated that into this DE and worked together. So there are items from Representative Torkelson's bill that are in here. There are items from other jurisdictions that we really learned from that are in here as well. And that is one of those is the BART system in San Francisco. And so we have a video from the Fox affiliate there that explains in a very matter of fact, straight up way as to what they call their transit ambassador program and what we'll call our trip transit riders investment program would do in their region.
Okay, well, we'll
some extra company on the platforms and on the trains. They're called ambassadors.
The visibility, you know that there's somebody around to be helpful and to take care of you, so to speak, you know, to have your back.
Under this pilot program that began Monday, 10 new unarmed ambassadors break off into two-person teams and patrol to become an extra set of eyes and ears for police and to provide an extra layer of security for passengers.
So this is our commitment to our ridership that they've been asking for, and we're going to continue to give them.
The ambassadors carry Narcan in case they encounter drug overdosers, pepper spray, and two-way radios connected to BART police dispatch. They also have to take into account their own safety.
So I can get on my radio at any time if I felt like I was in any harm. I will remove myself from the area and contact the police.
The ambassadors will be on trains and platforms from 2 o'clock in the afternoon until midnight, 7 days a week.
And they're going to be out in the San Francisco, Oakland area that we refer to as the core of the system, where most of the trains traverse. But we will also be pushing them down towards the end of the lines as well, so that our riders can get a presence in that part of the system as well.
Each ambassador has been trained in de-escalation techniques. Their job is to tackle quality of life concerns, but not get into confrontations with people. That's for the police. They can also answer questions from passengers.
They'll also be asking women with children to go up the elevator, or telling folks how to get out of the right exit.
The idea for the ambassadors program was born in the wake of the 2018 stabbing death of 18-year-old Nia Wilson by a knife-wielding stranger. The BART Police Officers Association supports the program and will oversee it.
Patrolling and kind of de-escalating situations where we don't necessarily have to call the police, and just educate and give people resources that we have.
BART says it will be evaluating the ambassadors program in 6 months. Then, if all goes well, it could become permanent and possibly even expanded. In Oakland, Rob Roth, KTVU, Fox 2 News.
Thank you for that, Representative Tapke. I think at this point there are fiscal implications to this bill, and I think that it would be appropriate to have Mr. Lee discuss those with the committee. Did you have a question? Mr. Lee will discuss that.
I mean, do we have a copy?
Oh.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, no, there's not an updated fiscal note. The fiscal note is to the base bill. I'll be walking through some of the differences in the DE amendment. I've requested an updated fiscal note for the DE amendment yesterday. The due date for that is the 28th.
Proceed, Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, so while the DE amendment made some changes in terms of the fiscal impact, there will be some similar structures in terms of the agencies and the types of funds impacted. So the fiscal note is essentially in two parts. There's the part that is impacting the Metropolitan Council, which is the first few pages of the fiscal note, and then there's the parts impacting the DNR and judiciary. So if you will turn to page 6 of the fiscal note, this is going through some of the assumptions of the Metropolitan Council on the underlying base bill. Driving much of the general fund cost in the base bill, as the Metropolitan Council lays out, is the original language requiring fair inspection targets of 5% in 2022, 7.5% in 2023, and 10% in 2024 and after. I will also note item number 9 in their assumptions would likely be the same or similar with the DE amendment. This is a requirement that the counties, Hennepin and Ramsey, with light rail transit lines, participate in 50% of the operating costs. So whatever state appropriations are made for this program, or whatever cost is incurred by the Metropolitan Council after fare revenue or fine revenue, the counties would be expected to participate in 50% of them. And one difference from the underlying bill to the DE amendment is that the underlying bill applied to the entire transit system. The DE amendment applies to just the two light rail lines. So this would be slightly different. Then I will go to some of the cost estimates for the underlying bill on page 7. You can see for 2022 at the top, the total project cost would be about $2.9 million. This is on the underlying bill. And then the county contribution, this is between Hennepin, Ramsey, and Sherburne County, so this would be different with the DE amendment, is below that at just under $1 million. And then the estimate for administrative citations and the state contribution. You can also see the estimated FTE numbers that the Metropolitan Council assumed with that underlying bill original assumption of certain percentages of passengers checked, starting at 25 FTEs in fiscal 2022 and 61 in 23. Then very quickly, so I will note that the DE amendment will change these numbers quite a bit, and leave it at that. Moving on to the other sections of the fiscal note, this is mostly outside the transportation budget area, but the next few pages are the DNR's impact, which shows zero impact, and then on page 11 is the Supreme Court's impact, or the impact on the courts. You can see a small amount of general fund dollars being impacted here. That's because there's an assumption that a certain amount of fine revenue that is collected under the current structure of misdemeanor citations and the, in addition to that fine, the surcharge would then not be collected and would be reduced. So I'll walk through very briefly how that would work. You can see some of the assumptions for how many citations are currently issued and what the courts are assuming to kind of base their fiscal impact off of on page 13, about halfway down. You can see the explanation of the fine formula. Then on page 14 and 15, you can see the summary of the estimated surcharge revenue loss to in the general fund, and also a small amount to the game and fish fund for DNR Natural Resources Peace Officer training. And I should just note on that box at the bottom, those are whole numbers. So if you can see for the game and fish fund in 2021, the loss is $42, not adding any zeros. And that, Mr. Chair and members, is the fiscal note for the underlying bill. As I said, there will be a similar structure in terms of an impact to the Metropolitan Council and an impact to the courts. Probably the courts will look relatively similar. The big difference with the DE amendment will be the impact to the Metropolitan Council with the $1 million appropriation and the removal of the requirement of a certain percentage of passengers checked. The Met Council nonetheless may identify costs beyond the appropriation.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question to Mr. Lee, thank you for your detailed information as always. In here, it talks a little bit about FTEs and the fact that they haven't been graded yet, so they're not sure exactly what's there, but they did use some sort of estimate for personnel costs. Do we have an idea of what that was?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg, drawing the committee's attention to page 7, where it shows at the top the number of FTEs at 25 in fiscal 2022 and 61 in 23. I'm trying to find where they assume the number of FTEs. Just a moment.
I think it's on page 6, towards top number 6.
Yes. Looking at item 4 and then item 5 and 6, the administrative costs. So it looks like on the underlying bill, the FTE complement in 23 would be 61 FTEs, 53 of which would be the community service officers or transit ambassadors, and 5 would be administrative staff. I would need to double check with the Metropolitan Council in terms of assumptions on rate of pay and things like that, but I can get back to the committee on that if that's what you're asking.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Yeah, that would be helpful because it only gives a total program cost and it doesn't really break down to what kind of estimate that they're using for salaries. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Tapke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And as we go forward with the DE, it's not specifically spelled out within the amendment. There's a fair amount of legislative intent within the amendment, but the goal there is to be between 15 and 20 CSOs for the TRIP personnel program.
Thank you. Is there any other questions of Mr. Lee? Okay. With that, members, are there questions? Are there questions of the author and the activity down there?
Never mind.
Okay, all right.
Passing a note.
So there will be an additional fiscal note presented as this makes its way through the other finance committees. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tabke, you brought a dramatically changed proposal to us from what was rolled out originally. And I guess my first question would be, when your first proposal was rolled out, it was rolled out with quite a bit of fanfare and support from the Met Council and the Governor's Office. I guess I'd like to hear from Met Council as to how they feel about your changes. Do you know, or should we bring them forward?
I think it would be appropriate, Representative Ferguson, since you addressed specifically the Met Council. We do have Mr. Shetman here, and I think he can answer it directly rather than through Mr. Tapti, Representative Tapti.
Great. Mr. Chair,
welcome
members.
To the committee.
Great. Thank you. I'm Judd Shetman with the Met Council, Government Affairs Director. Good to see everybody. So to your question, Representative Torkelson, the council is really happy to know that the delete all amendment does contain the two elements of, number one, reclassifying the penalty for a fare evasion. So we appreciate that is still intact, as well as the ability to allow someone other than a sworn officer to provide that ticket. Andy mentioned just a minute ago, this is a still relatively new delete all, so there are some significant changes that we have to look at related to the funding and timing related to this bill. So we'll be happy to follow up with the committee on that, but there are potentially some timing issues in here with the 6 months, but it's certainly something that we are happy to work with the committee on and with Representative Tabke. And just to be completely honest, we're really happy that this piece, those core pieces in there, related to the reclassification and allowing someone other than a sworn officer still remain in the delete everything. And we look forward to continuing to work with everybody on that. And I don't want to get too far out in front of my skis here on some of those impacts, because we just haven't had time to work through the delete all. But I just want to make sure that remind folks that when Mr. Lee was walking through the fiscal note again, those numbers were looking bigger. He said it'll look scaled down because the delete all amendment only applies to LRT, where ours had it applied to a much bigger, broader scope. So we need to spend a little time with it. But I also appreciate the video. I thought that does a pretty good job of explaining kind of the concept of what these folks would look like on the trains. And so with that, I don't have a whole lot else to add other than we appreciate that it seems to be looking good as far as the core components that we were looking for. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Shetland. Appreciate that input. This is a six-month program. Do you think we're going to cure our security issues in 6 months? And if we're going to go beyond 6 months, how do you anticipate Metropolitan Transit will handle the costs involved in this program?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, you raise a good point. The timing of that, the one-time nature of the funds, are concerns that we have. But again, we just haven't had the time to talk about this. As you know, we are we just saw the delete all yesterday, and our folks were working on being prepared to walk through the questions related to the original fiscal note. And so I need to spend some time with that. But I will be honest that I think that the 6 month time frame is a little tight, and that shared that actually with Representative Tabke, and we look forward to sorting that out.
Well, thank you,
Vice Chair Tabke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I just want to piggyback on what Mr. Chetnin just said. He is, I think it would be fair to say, vigorously advocated for the fact that 6 months is 6 months for getting this put together and getting this up and running is not enough time. But that being said, we very much are extremely cognizant of the urgency, and we know that there is a problem. We know that there is there are solutions out there, and working with, as we heard last week, with what Chair Zelli and Chief Frizzell are working on, Met Council's working on a lot of additional safety issues, so additional police on the trains and throughout the system, plainclothes police throughout on the trains throughout the system, live video surveillance on and monitoring on the platforms and on the trains. There's coming platform monitoring, as well as different text alerts that riders will be able to work on. And again, this program, the TRIP program, will be able to work together with all those safety innovations and pieces that are moving forward. And we think it's really important to recognize the urgency and recognize the fact that this has to happen sooner than later. And so we're going to push as hard as we can to get this rolled out quickly and not in the same time frame that the original bill was working on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Tabke. Well, we've known for a long time that there are security issues on the system. Your DE dramatically rolls back the efforts that you were making in your original bill. You're not even doing anything for the buses, for instance. And how are you going to hire 15 to 20 people with $1 million? I just don't know how that can be done. You've got a long list of training requirements for these people. It's going to take a long time to get them even qualified to do the work. They might spend their entire 6 months just getting trained. It's a head scratcher, Representative Tabke. This bill is dramatically different from what you originally proposed, and I don't know if it's quite ready for prime time.
Representative Tabke.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, I love the fact that you and Mr. Chetnin are on the exact same page with this, you and Met Council. It is very clear to me that there is an issue, and as we've talked about, the fact that there are things that need to happen and that need to happen sooner than later. And you're absolutely right, this is an issue that's been brewing for quite some time and needs to be addressed, and that's what we're really working on doing here, is addressing the urgency around this issue. And then secondly, with it, it's an aggressive timeline. There is zero doubt about that whatsoever. And with this aggressive timeline, we hope to have everyone's help. And it may be more than $1 million. And so that's what we're working with Met Council to figure out today. And if you would like to allocate more to that and spend more money into this program, I'm more than happy to work together. We backed those numbers out of what was in the current fiscal note. And so that's how we came up with those. But there may need to be some changes as that goes forward, and how to figure this out to make sure that we have a program that works well. I mean, we just can't fail here, and we need to make sure for all of our transit riders that we are improving the safety and the experience of using our transit system. And so that's what we're going for. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Tabke. I'm going to stop there and allow my colleagues to get some questions in. I don't want to dominate the hearing, but if there's time at the end, I may come back.
Thank you. We have Representative O'Driscoll, followed by Representative Joachim, and then Representative Petersburg.
Mr. Chair, I may just ask to defer, because I was going to ask Mr. Shetland some questions, and I see that one of my colleagues has called him off on a sidebar to visit with him on some matters that she may have some concerns. And so when they're done with the consultation, I would be happy to do that. But in the interest of committee time, if you want to just put me whenever it's available, when
Mr.
Shetland's free.
Chetnin is seated, we'll
thank you. Yes.
Representative Petersburg.
Joachim.
Or I'm sorry, Joachim. Sorry.
I have a question for Shetnin, too. So.
Okay. All right. Mr. Shetnin, there are at least two members that have questions for you, so I think if you could just take a seat here, there may be some more. So why don't we go revert back to Representative O'Driscoll and then Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chetnin, welcome back. I apologize, it came in a little bit late. I was returning some constituent calls in my district, and in hearing you address the committee, you had indicated, or at least I had picked up, that your the Met Council was not consulted in the creation of the DE amendment. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I would say that the council was consulted in the fact that the DE amendment still contains the articles that we were looking to move forward related to the declassification of the penalty and the allowing someone other than a sworn officer. So those elements that the council is interested in making sure are there, but the fact that Representative Tabke kept those in his DE, I would say that that is what the council's concerns would have been, and they were addressed in his DE, or they're kept in his DE. That makes sense.
Representative Vistal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Shetland, to follow up on that, relatively speaking, the light rail transit system in the Twin Cities area and in the Seven County metro area is sizably smaller compared to what they might be in other larger communities, Los Angeles. I'm just trying to think if they even have one. But my point being New York City, Newark, some of these other larger, Philadelphia, even the metro in Washington, D.C. They service a lot more passengers on an ongoing basis and a regular basis. Have you consulted with your counterparts across the country to find out what they have done in order to be able to help ebb the ridership concerns that people have when they board those trains, their personal safety, and some of the other things that are on there? And if so, have they been incorporated into the DE amendment or into any other provisions that were in the original bill from 48 hours ago, or again, the DE that we saw today?
Mr. Shetland.
Well, Mr. Chair and committee members, it is safe to say that the Council Metro Transit did look at what other kind of peer agencies were doing. We know that the system, the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transit Association, the King County in Seattle, TriMet in Portland. We also know that the governor of Massachusetts, or else the mayor of Boston, I can't remember which one, was looking to do something related to administrative citations and these ambassador type programs. And as you can see from the video that was just shown, that the Bay Area transit system in the San Francisco area is employing these ambassadors. I will say that that this is a relatively new trend as far as what transit systems are doing across the country. So we have been asked, you know, to be able to provide detail about how this is working. And since this is still kind of a sun rising versus a sun setting issue, we don't have the detail that some may be looking for. But I can tell you that what we're proposing with those two pieces of this are going to be better than what we have today. And so we know that how the fare evasion system is working today just isn't where it should be. As you heard our chairman sit here last Thursday, he explained that we had 5,000 warnings given out over the transit or the rail system last year. We issued about 1,500 citations, and of those, about 3% or around 40 to 45 of them resulted in a full fare or fine payment or a partial fine payment. So no matter what happens, we need to change the way that we're approaching this. And so if we could have the help of you in the legislature to make a change, we'd like to make sure that we have the ability to do more enforcement and take another look at how we're doing this, because as our chairman said, we have to look forward and make sure that we are able to give everybody the safe ride that they expect, and we expect that as well. So I know that is a really long answer to your question, but the fact is that we have looked at what other peer regions are doing, and it is all still relatively new, but at the most basic element, whatever change we can make will be an improvement.
Representative Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, this will be my final follow-up, and I'll let other colleagues, and perhaps if time permits, I would cycle back. Mr. Shetland, you said that other peer systems across the country are employing something like this. I'm not sure if you're talking about all of the features that you have that were preserved in the DE, ambassadors or the new name that we're going to be using for them, or reduction in fines for people who choose to bypass the fare box. I hate to put a cliche out there, but pay the fine and not the fare seems like a kind of a counterproductive way to do that. I've learned that if the penalty is more than the cost, you pay the cost and not the penalty. So I'm wondering what of those features that they have employed that are in our bill, and if they have success with people paying when the fine is lower, or if they have an increase in people skipping the fare box and, again, pay the fine and not the fare.
Mr. Shetman.
Oh, Mr. Chair and members, the component that is most used right now is the ambassador program. I can't speak necessarily to how they have adjusted their fines or the penalties. But what we do know, and I know that the chair mentioned this last week, is that we don't have a prosecuting attorney at the Met Council. So when there is a citation that's written, that is given to a county prosecutor, and they are having to make the determination about whether or not this should be a criminal offense on par with a DUI or a simple assault versus making it a similar to a fine that you would pay for a parking ticket. And if we looked at the opposite and tried to make a parking ticket a criminal offense, I think people would be really upset. And so we're trying to make the penalty fit the similar type of offense that you have related to a $2.50 fare evasion or something in that magnitude. So I think that we're just trying to reclassify it in a way where it fits by allowing us to have someone other than a sworn officer, or like a community service officer, which has been mentioned here, that allows us to have more enforcement out there at a lower cost, and it also allows us then through these citations to be able to have those citations and the fines that are collected come back to the council versus to the courts, and allows us to reinvest that back into the program. So I just really do sincerely encourage the legislature to strongly consider this. I think it's worth a shot for us to be able to take a new look at how we approach this. And I would be happy to sit down with any one of you to explain this further. I don't have what every one of our peer agencies that is taking a look at this. I don't have that information with me, but I can certainly follow up with any of you and have the folks that have done that research for us sit down with you and have that conversation. But it is worth taking a new approach. I can't say that enough.
Thank you, Mr. Shetland. Representative Joachim, and then Representative Houseman will be after Representative Posner.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just want to first thank you, Representative Tapke, for taking this bill. And I would, maybe my definition of dramatic is a little different than my colleagues, but I see you narrowing the scope of this bill to address the immediate need that we see in an effective and efficient manner, which is what we should expect when we do policy. And I know pushing it, being active in 6 months, is probably still quicker, quicker than some would like, but maybe slower than others would like. We know the immediate need is there, and I have confidence that the Met Council, while it may strain trying to get it done in 6 months, that I think you can pull it off. I think the tight labor market might be the one thing that gives you a little bit of aggravation on that. I also wanted to remind folks, and I know you'll hash this out probably in Judiciary Committee, Public Safety, which I think you'll be making a stop at on the fine thing. But there is stats and proof that we've had in other areas of our government when we change things from criminal citation or misdemeanor to a payable, that we actually recoup more money because the cost of going after in courts and everything way outshadows what anybody's ever paying. So it doesn't really, you're not really seeing pay the fine or pay the fare. It really is, you're actually ending up collecting more, and it is more of a deterrent because it's actually been enforced, because it's easier to enforce. The one question I did have for Mr. Shetman, and I really want to thank Representative Tapke for fleshing out the trip personnel duties a little bit better and the requirements, especially around training. Can you tell me, Mr. Shetman, what some of the de-escalation training you might have some of your drivers already do? Do you have that in your systematic programs yet, or?
Mr. Chair and Representative Joachim, I think it would be best if I'm sure we do have that, but I do not want to speculate on that. I apologize. I was not expecting to be asked that question today, and I think that'd be better served speaking to our folks at Metro Transit who do that training, and just allowing the committee to know what that is. I am certain that there is that is part of what they do, but I don't want to speculate, especially since I'm providing testimony on that.
I understand. Thank you, Mr. Shetland. Mr. Chair, one other comment.
Representative Joachim.
Just to the de-escalation training piece of it, I know how important that can be. I work in the schools and I've had some of that training myself, and it really does work more miracles than people can imagine in de-escalating situations verbally to get folks to the point of compliance. And I know some of the de-escalation training techniques also have some, you know, 80% verbal, about 20% holds. And yes, I could probably put some of you in a hold because of it, but I wouldn't do that. But no, it's really, really important for people to understand having these trip personnel trained in that. It may sound like it's not going to do a lot, but it accomplishes a whole lot. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Petersburg, followed by Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tapke, you know, I worked with you on many committees, and I know that you are earnest about improving the safety on our trains. And I think I wanted you to understand everybody around this table shares that same concern. We need to do this right, though. And when we hear from Mr. Shetland that, well, even this is better than what we have, it's kind of like saying I'm driving a car and I got a leaky radiator hose. Duct tape is better than what I had, but it's not the solution. And the concern that I have is how this has been put together very quickly with a lot of fanfare, and now what we're talking about is going to be a lot different from that piece of it. As you heard later, I had asked about the cost of the personnel, and one of your comments that you made in that was, well, it's $1 million, we may need more now or later. Again, doesn't give very much confidence in this committee to know where we're at. The original bill, and we can use just the fiscal note that we have, called for $6 million and approximately 60 FTEs. Now we're at $1 million. We can just kind of make the guess that it's going to be 1/6 of the 63, which is 10. And that includes some administration. In teams of two, that's, even if we put them all into the ambassadors or the trip people, that's 10. Some of the differences between our system and the one that we saw in Oakland is those train cars were connected together, so there was passability between one car to another. Our cars aren't that way, at least last time I was on it, that was my recollection. And so that means that this couple is just involved with that one particular car. It just seems like that makes it very difficult for us to really deal with the safety from even the entire train. And you, with the number of trains that we have going on a regular basis, 10 people or five teams is certainly a little bit less. So I think we need to continue to work on this, and I'm sorry that I think this has come before us before it has really been all vetted out. So how do we get beyond all those questions that we have and expect us to move this forward?
Representative Tapke.
Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg, thank you very much for that. I beg to differ with the fact that this is a dramatically different plan, a dramatically different program than what was originally discussed. The concept is exactly the same as it was before. The concept that we want to improve the safety, improve the fare collections that we have, and improve the experience of using our transit system is absolutely still there, and that is at the core of what the original bill was and what the DE is today. And so with those with that idea in mind, that is the core and that's where we're trying to get to, we are in a bonding year, in a non-budget cycle year. And so while I think it would be fantastic if we would have been able to keep with the original plan of putting together the full-fledged program of everything going forward, that just, as we looked at the realities of where we're at today and the pragmatics of how we get this done and how we get the urgency accounted for of wanting to get this moving forward with the pilot program, a six-month pilot program, is in my opinion the very best way to go, and it has been fully discussed, all the mechanics and all of the work behind it are all still the exact same thing. But with this, we'll be able to understand, especially on the light rail system, how this can work and know what our fare recovery changes will be. We'll be able to know how many folks we are able to talk with, know how many folks. And so with that, we'll be able to put, once it comes to the intent would be in the 22-23 budget cycle to say, hey, this is a program that we, in a bipartisan fashion, all agree works, and that no matter who is in charge in 22, that this is a program that everybody looks at and says, hey, we accomplished this, this, and this together in trying to get this these pieces moving, and we all agree that these are really important components of this and put together a program that will survive the long term, and we'll know exactly what was accomplished during that 6-month pilot program. And it's more of a walk before we run type thing, and not putting together a program that will live into perpetuity, but one that we can learn from and then make sure that everything is right for our system once we move forward.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Representative. And we differ a little bit on whether or not this is an extreme difference, certainly, but going to a 6-month pilot program, doesn't that beg the question, what happens at the end of that 6 months? I mean, we're talking about the next time legislature gets together, and since this is a legislative solution, and it appears that it hasn't been fully vetted by through the Met Council, at the end of 6 months, when the money runs out, the program could end up stopping. And so then you're dealing with the same issues then for that last 6 months before the legislature can get involved with. It does seem to me that that is a little bit on the short-sighted side and really doesn't address the full safety needs that's carrying on into the future, because the legislature won't be back in session until January of next year. So it's a curiosity to me.
Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Petersburg. So if we timeline this out, and we this has to be up and running within 6 months of the effective date, if we have this signed, I mean, it'll be May before anything with this happens, and then if they get the program up and running by fall, early winter type thing, is they get everyone trained, to get everybody up and running, and actually get people on the light rail train, in order it will be in the middle of the program, understanding and seeing exactly how this works during the heat of what we've got for people who use our transit system as shelter. We'll be able to see exactly what happens by having these trip personnel out there working together with the police department and with the police officers in order to help solve the problems that exist today. So I think it works, and we'll have a really great understanding of how it can work as we're going through the next budgeting cycle, and have it, whether we want to continue with it at that point, then we fund it, and then we continue with it at that point. And if we don't believe it's working, and we don't believe it's giving us the results that we as a committee and as a legislature want to see, then it doesn't get funded in the 22-23 cycle.
Just quick,
okay, one last one, Representative.
And it's just a debatable question, but most of these are inactive effective July 1, which means it ends December 31st. Legislature isn't going to be able to move this forward until later on in the session, so we still have a timeline issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just had a clarification question for the Met Council, Mr. Shetnan. And the question, Mr. Chair, Mr. Shetnan, you'd said that originally as my discussion of working on this similar issue, or the same issue, we'll have a different approach slightly, but you'd mentioned that the administrative citations, being able to permit that is was one of the goals, and have other employees other than a sworn officer be able to offer those citations was basically the goal or the solution that we wanted to try to achieve to advance better transit security. And you'd mentioned declassification versus in your previous comments, Mr. Shetnan. Is that similar to decriminalization? Is that the goal, or is it to permit administrative citations?
Mr. Shetnan.
Mr. Chair and members, just to clarify, the goal is for us to, There is the decriminalization word that has been used. I actually think a better way to say that is to reclassify it to make it a either a petty misdemeanor or the administrative citation route that we are going that we are proposing. So it could be stated as decriminalization. I actually think that the word reclassification is the best way to put it. I don't know what I said, what word I had used earlier, but that's what I meant. And so it is trying to make the penalty kind of fit the offense better. And again, that's where we're saying that we think it fits better along the lines of what a parking ticket would be.
And Mr. Chair, and I do acknowledge the goal and the strategy of having the administrative citations. If either the author or maybe Mr. Burris could clarify, the decriminalization portion that was so highly touted when the bill was first laid out, is that language still in the bill? And if you could point it out to us.
Representative Tapke.
Mr. Chair and Representative Koznick, yes, the reclassifying from a misdemeanor to a petty misdemeanor is exactly the same as it was in the original bill. That has not changed. And is a very important component.
Okay. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps my comments are directed both at you and at Council. I, just listening to this, am developing a really high anxiety level because of the urgency of this. And it occurs to me that this is when it is necessary for House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats, the Governor's Office and Met Council, sit around a table immediately, and because what's looming is by March 11, the governor is going to come out with his supplemental bill. And, you know, to get some resolution, clarity, and cost in a timely way, and the reason for this urgency that I feel, one is public safety, lives are at stake, and so action immediately, vigorous, good management has to happen immediately. The other thing is that everybody in the state has a stake in this, and that is the public health of this region, the economic health of this region. This system moves more than 80 million people a year, 260,000 a day. That's an essential piece of what keeps us economically healthy and competitive. The bulk of the taxes get generated here, and then they go all over the state, and we're happy about that. We all do better when we all do better. But that means this system has to be safe and well used immediately, and that we just don't have the time for it anymore. And so what I would hope is as quickly as possible, we give Met Council the management tools they need and the funding they need, and then let them get to work. And we get out of the way, because they've got a lot of work to do. We just have to give them the tools. That's our job. So that sense of urgency, but right now I just think it requires all the players to sit around a table and think about that March 11 deadline.
Thank you. Representative Heinrich, and then I don't think I have anyone else on the list. Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tapke, I was wondering why have a clause describing certain demographic that you wish to hire in the bill? Why not hire the best candidates regardless of their cultural, racial, or ethnic community? I think Minnesotans will be best served by developing a hierarchy of competence. And so I guess if you could answer that first, and I have some questions about the public safety. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tapke.
Mr. Chair and Representative Heinrich, I thank you very much for that question. The reasoning for that in there, and I think it is very, very important, is that we need to make sure that this is a program that can be and will be successful. And where we are seeing the issues within, especially if we talk about the light rail system and the system as a whole, are issues with chemical dependency and issues with homelessness and issues around those concerns. And we need to make sure that we have the right people there to help fix those issues. And so with that, people who live in the neighborhoods that are going to be affected. So as you read through the bill, I'm sure the DE, there are provisions for making sure that we are deploying people at the right, using people strategically and deploying them at the right time and in the right locations for where we see the most issue. And with someone like this, as you talk to any law enforcement personnel, as you talk to anyone who is involved in these types of issues, you will understand very clearly that the very best people for helping to solve these problems and to find solutions together with people are folks who are from that neighborhood and folks who have the same background and folks who have the same types of concerns and life histories as it is with what they're experiencing. And so I think it's really important that we consider that as we move forward in order for this to be the most successful program possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, Representative Tabke, that's my only concern there is just, you know, there's a litany of skills that these people need to have. And I hope that we can put that first and foremost, again, to develop a hierarchy of competence. When anybody, no matter what their racial background might be, goes to the doctor, they sure hope that that doctor has the competence to work on that individual. It's less concerning, I think, to any Minnesotan. Exactly what the background or the demographic is, and so that's my concern there. The other questions I have just are in regards to safety of these ambassadors or trip personnel as well. We saw in the video with the San Francisco system that personnel does carry pepper spray for their own self-defense. We could end up and say, you know, I was pleased to hear that there is a As they have exclusive authority to administrate citations, they do have the ability to call on a peace officer to come help in a situation, but sometimes there's a delay there. We heard in testimony from some of the operators that there's not a quick as response as they would like sometimes. What was the background of the thinking? Have you consulted with law enforcement personnel? Why is there a difference in just that aspect of it, for example, to essentially have these ambassadors not armed in any way to be able to defend themselves against a credible threat?
Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein, not Representative Hornstein, Representative Heinrich, sorry. Exactly. So with that, I find the... I don't know if it's the intent or the context of your question extremely frustrating on the fact that there is a narrative that is being pushed out there that in the vast majority of times is being pushed out there simply for politics to divide and conquer and to say that we have this person A versus B and those type of things and drive a wedge between folks. Before I was elected to the House, we had a program that I was working with to help get students. So when teachers are taking students to a program at the U of M from Shakopee or when they are taking them to the Capitol for something, they worked together to use public transit. What that does is it dramatically reduces the costs of the busing system because it costs a lot of money to bring a bus from Shakopee to the Capitol, for example, or to the U of M. And with that, it has gone really, really well. And we've gotten a lot of students to understand how public transit works and how they can get from point A to B if for some reason they find themselves without a vehicle or they can't afford one or whatever's happening. So it exposes them to using public transit, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And recently there has been an overwhelming narrative about the safety of the city and the safety of the transit system specifically that has been going out. And I very much agree that there are issues that need to get figured out and there are issues that happen, but it is being very much put to a high level of drama and a very high level of unnecessary, what I believe, concern as to how things can move forward. And so one of the students, I was talking to the teacher earlier this week, one of the students' parents was concerned about their daughter taking transit to get to the Capitol for a program that's happening here in a couple weeks. And I find that extremely sad because it is overwhelmingly a safe. It is overwhelmingly a system that people can use. Are there issues? Are there ways that people feel uncomfortable using it? Absolutely. There are things that absolutely must get fixed, and we're using this program and a variety of other things to help fix those issues. But this concept that it is inherently unsafe to use the train or inherently unsafe to use our transit system in the metro is just flat out wrong. You are much more, it is much more dangerous to set foot in a vehicle and drive on a road than it is to be on a light rail train. It is much more dangerous to play in a backyard pool statistically than it is to ride on our light rail trains. And so I inherently reject the assumption that it is inherently unsafe, and there are ways that that moves forward. But
Representative Tapke, we have two more people,
right,
and we have to get this to an I think it's a good summary statement, maybe.
Yeah, all right.
But if you want to just really wrap up, and then I'm going to have
– I can be done from there.
If I could, Mr. Chair, I just have one more follow-up.
Quick response.
Very quick.
And I want to give Representative Torkelson the last word, so I'm going to have Representative West butt in before him and then Representative Torkelson.
Thank you.
And then
thank
we'll
you, Representative Tapke. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I like what Representative Hausman had to say. To quote her, lives are at stake.
Mm-hmm.
Fare evasion, I don't think, as important as it is, it's not what Minnesotans are most concerned about. They are concerned about the public safety factor here. We heard lots of testimony over different issues. So I don't mean to make that sound like a political football. And I get you. I think that your intent here is not politics either. So in dealing with that safety, one more question in regards to the ambassadors or the trip officers. Are they trained in any type of, we talk about de-escalating a bunch of different things, if they're not going to have pepper spray or some way to defend themselves against a possible weapon or a violent threat, do they have some sort of hand-to-hand self-defense training included in that? Or would that be something that you'd consider to have in there as well, just to help de-escalate an otherwise maybe violent situation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Heinrich, there is nothing in here that doesn't allow them from carrying pepper spray or having any sort of self-defense pieces. So if Met Council feels that that is something that's appropriate and meets the need of this, then they absolutely can do that for sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative West, Representative Torkelson, then we're going to get to amendments. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, you say it's safer to be in your car, and I mean, it's safer to be in the train than the car, which may be statistically true, but you're not going to get stabbed in your car. You're not going to get shot in your car, and these are things that are actually happening. And when we had the chair of Met Council say every single member of his family that's been on light rail recently has witnessed a crime, and then we had the light rail conductors in here saying every single day they witness a crime. And
Mr.
so
Chair,
to say it's like a car, it's completely different. It's
Thank
completely
you, Mr.
different.
Chair. I know people are getting heated about this, and people are entitled to their own opinions, but they're not entitled to their own facts. Commissioner Zelli did not say that.
Okay. Representative West, why don't you continue with your question?
Not everything.
Okay. We will continue. Representative West, if you have a question, please ask it, and we'll wrap up with Representative Torkelson. Finish your question.
Representative Joachim took issue with, you have control of your situation in the car. You do not have control of it on the light rail.
Okay, so it sounds like a, do you want a quick response, Representative Tapke?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate the fact that Representative West, Mr. Chair, I agree with you that there are absolutely things that are concerning, and there are absolutely things that are wildly problematic and unsafe and issues that have to be handled, and that's what we're trying to do today. And I appreciate your help.
And then we'll get to amendments. Representative Torkelson, if you have a question or maybe a wrap-up comment or statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This will just be a wrap-up. I'll try to make it very quick. I'd like to thank Representative Hausman for pointing out that this system is an asset to our entire state. And it should be safe and easy to use and useful. And Representative Tapke used the word sad a number of times. And what makes me sad is a number of people that have come to me or that I've talked to that have said when the light rail train was first put in, they thought, this is a great thing. I'm going to use it. I'm going to use it to ride to work. But now I don't. I've quit using it because I no longer feel safe using this system. That's what's sad to me. And at the end of the day, it's not our job as a legislature to operate the light rail train. We're here because of the dysfunction, but at the end of the day, to respond quickly and to run this system well, it's up to the Metropolitan Council and the Metropolitan Transit Association to do their job and run this train properly. We can't run it for them, and frankly, I don't think we can move quickly, because it's not just this room that has to make a decision. It's across the street, and it's in the corner of the building, other building across the street too. It's hard for us to move quickly. The best thing we can do is point out that there's a problem and hope that the people that have some control over this actually take action quickly, and they are taking some action, and I applaud that. I just hope it's successful. I do thank you for bringing this issue forward, Representative Tabke. I don't thank you for weakening your bill.
Thank you very much. Members, we're going to get to the amendments now. And I do very much appreciate the good conversation we had today on both sides. It is an issue that many are concerned about. We will take the A9 first, and does someone want to claim the A9 amendment supervised injection sites?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Kosnick, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This new version of the gutted original ambassador bill has a new subdivision in there on the first page, even administration of opioid antagonist for drug overdose. And I think you're encouraging, we already know that there's a drug and a crime problem on the light rail. Now I think this encourages it even further as basically a supervised injection site. But for the sake of time, I'm not going to offer this amendment, but I think Representative Tabke's new bill weakened it even further. So we won't offer that bill.
Thank you. The amendment is before us. Representative Cagle.
Mr. Chair, he said he's not going to offer it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, he's
just
withdrawing.
For the sake of time.
I'm sorry. But Representative Cagle still wants to say something. I was concentrating on
I would too if I was the chair.
Representative Cagle, did you want to? We have limited time,
sure.
So
I just want to, Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick, I want to thank you for removing this amendment because it's a very serious issue. I know many of you know that, I've dealt directly with opiate use disorder, and this bill isn't the time or place to be discussing injection or this topic. And so it's something that deserves an earnest and sincere debate. And so I'm glad that we're not taking it up here.
No, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kosnick.
We're not going to debate this amendment, but I appreciate your comments, and I personally I have family members with this issue as well, and so I do take it seriously, and I think Minnesotans expect us to take transit safety serious.
Thank you very much. The A10 amendment, this deals with fair policy. It looks like, is this another one from you? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Tabke, committee members. In the original version of your bill that was rolled out with great fanfare in front of a committee hearing that we were going to have, and we did have, that brought more light to the seriousness of transit safety, the seriousness of fare evasion. Your original rollout had certain metrics of checking fare evasion, and you seem to have stripped that out of the bill as it's not important anymore. Leads me to believe that perhaps you just think that we should not enforce fares on the trains. And so what the amendment does is it's free fare for all, because that's what I think your bill in its weakened state is doing.
Representative Tabke.
Is the amendment before us?
The amendment is before. Did you move the amendment?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I do move the A10 amendment.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick, I do not believe that is the case. What this, what our bill will do today is to increase the amount of fares that's collected, increase the amount of personnel who are working to make sure that all fares are being paid and working to make sure that the transit system is running the way that we would like it to. I think there are many people in this room and outside of this room that would like us to have the discussion about free fare for everyone, but that is not in any stretch what this bill is doing or where it's going, so I ask members to please vote against the A-10 amendment.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Koznick.
I would request a roll call, and am I allowed to make comments as well?
Quick comments, but we do have a roll call.
Okay. We'll request a roll call. I appreciate your comments. The advocates that spoke in favor of your bill in the past certainly advocated differently than what you're saying here today and what your bill does.
Representative Tapke, do you have any advice?
As Mr. Chair and members, I ask that we vote down the vote against the A-10 amendment.
The author requests a no vote. The clerk will take the roll. Representative Heinrich.
Just a question. So this would be a vote to not allow free ridership.
Basically, Representative Koznick is advocating for free ridership.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, for the committee's benefit, a yes vote would support the amendment. A no vote would not support the amendment, just for clarity.
Mr. Chair.
Representative, no.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I wasn't going to comment, but people are trying to, they're turning this into a gotcha amendment, and Mr. Chair and members, while this may be aspirational for us to do this, and there may be people out there that want to do this, and it may make some sense to get better, more ridership on the transit systems. If we're going to do this, we need to fund the Met Council and the transit system at a higher rate. This would be a great bill on its own, but in talking about this bill, what they were talking about here, it's about increasing the security, increasing the quality of the riders. Ridership on the trains. This isn't the place for this bill, so we should vote this down now and bring it back as a full bill if that's what we want to do.
Okay. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Hornstein.
No.
Vice Chair Tabke.
No.
Representative Torkelson.
No.
Representative Bernardi.
No.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Hausman.
No.
Representative Heinrich.
No.
Representative Cagle?
No.
Representative Koznick?
No.
Representative Mason?
No.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative O'Driscoll?
No.
Representative Petersburg?
No.
Representative Richardson?
No.
Representative Runbeck?
No.
Representative West?
No.
Representative Walgamott? Representative Joachim?
No.
There being zero ayes and 17 nays, and one absence, the motion is not real. He was not here. So yeah. Okay, moving right along, we have an A-11 amendment.
That is mine, Mr. Chair.
Proceed. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A-11, I will move the A-11 amendment, and this new version of the gutted previous bill is has a pilot program, and we're trying to solve a long-term security issue on our transit system. It wasn't mentioned in the Met Council's strategy or goals of having this issue before us to have a short-term solution, and with the 6 months of the pilot program, you know, this bill's turned. We worked over it in the interim. We were trying to work on it in a bipartisan manner. All of a sudden, we had a press conference. A DFL-only press conference came out. DFL-only bill. We were trying to work together. This got partisan and political, and so I think it would be appropriate to have your pilot program end on November 3rd, 2020 at 8 p.m. because it seems like it's more of an election and political bill. But, Mr. Chair, I know we're short on time. I will not move this amendment or withdraw this amendment.
The A-11 is withdrawn. Members, thank you again for we have one more. Sorry.
Yes.
A-8. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Representative Rundle. Oh. Sorry, I saw the Representative Koznick's amendments, so now I see yours. Please proceed with the A-8.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, the A8, I'll move the A8 amendment, Mr. Chair.
The A8 amendment's before us.
And so, Representative Tapke, I do, you know, appreciate the work you've put in. I mean, obviously, it's a big and massive and complex problem. And we've heard this bill primarily as being about fare evasion. But I think in the course of the last few months, we are becoming so aware through the testimony of operators, news articles, and so on, that the problem is much more than fare evasion. So I'm very concerned that this is, you know, the bill is just a toe in the water. And in fact, as somebody said, it maybe encourages the bad behavior and doesn't get rid of the intolerable, uncivil situations that we've heard. I mean, you know, behavior on the trains that frighten operators, that are turning off the public because of terrible smells, terrible sights, terrible, you know, events on the train. So we cannot afford to be in denial about this problem. And I kind of hear some of the comments from the other side as being in denial. I mean, if we do not address it and address it immediately and in a forceful way, I mean, it's out of control. It's literally out of control. So the amendment here would be to say that we have to have one police officer on every train, which is a lot more money, I understand. But we've put a lot of money, billions, I'll remind you, into a train. And so we need to make it as good as possible. And I think with peace officer on the train, you're going to get fare compliance, but you're also going to be able to remove immediately the bad actors. Because that's what we hear now is not happening. The operators will call for Metro Transit police, but they never get intersected at the right times. I mean, we have to deal with that at the moment. So that's what this amendment does. I feel like that's where we need to go in terms of discussion, in terms of more hard work. But it's such a serious problem, and I feel like this is the best way that we can address it.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and Representative Runbeck. Yes, I agree with you entirely that this is a serious, serious issue, and I don't think there's anyone that is taking that lightly whatsoever. This requires serious solutions, and together with what's happening the Met Council is doing today and with the future of what we hope this DE1 amendment and 3085 bill will be, is will help bring serious solutions to that issue. This is your solution. Here is something that would have extraordinary costs and extraordinary ramifications to it, and I encourage a no vote on this amendment.
Thank you. The author encourages a no vote. Representative Runbeck, your
Mr. Chair,
response.
You know, it's a lot. It will be a lot of money, I'm certain. But in relation to everything else, you know, that's built into the cost of operation, of having a system like this, it's a pretty small cost, I think. But I'm, for the sake of time and the committee and so on, I know we're going to discuss all this many more times, I'm going to withdraw the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Representative Koznick?
Well, the amendment's been withdrawn, but I was just going to add that certainly the solution to add more officers would help solve a serious security issue, and which I think is a needed. Because looking at even page 5, this is more of a social service program than it is a serious safety and security bill. On page 5, it talks about social service agencies or social services at least 3 times. And so I respect that you withdrew the amendment. And members, today, when we go on session, I will be dropping our bill. We finally have our jackets, and I would invite members across the aisle if you want to talk about a serious solution and work in a bipartisan. I've got space on the front page for you if you want to have that conversation.
Representative Tapke, closing remarks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, and everyone here for a great conversation as to where our Metro Transit can and should go. As I just mentioned, this is a serious issue that requires serious solutions, and I am proud to have worked with many folks within the Met Council, within this building, within transit organizations, other folks who really want to see this help and move forward. So I look forward to everyone's yes vote on this bill, and we will take it to public safety and have a discussion there as well.
Thank you, Representative Tappy. And just quickly, I want to thank you. I know you've worked very hard on this, and I think that we now have a new and innovative safety program that could start as early as, you know, the first of next year or very early next year, which is a lot faster than your original plan, and that we will be evaluating that program very carefully and very closely to see if it works. I'm confident it would. I thought the video was very informative, and I appreciated your sharing that with us because, as the video said, it was a new set of eyes and ears for passengers. I think that was stated in the video, and a new level of security. So we're moving forward, members, a new level of security, more eyes and ears on the trains, getting it done faster than your original bill. I think that's a very good development, and I appreciate you bringing that forward. So, members, I will Representative Tacky, would you like to renew your motion that House File 3085, as amended, be referred to the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Finance and Policy Division?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, as you said.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you, members. And, you know, we will be in touch with you about if there's any change in the MnDOT activity tomorrow. If many members can't make it, then we'll try to reschedule or do something specifically for us. And then, again, no committee on Tuesday. And we'll stay tuned on some other bills before us. I thank everybody for the good civil conversation. We stand adjourned.